the Jonathan Stark show is more dreamlike than show-like. Almost like a Clockwork Orange-style orgy of nostalgia. Hello and welcome to Terrifying Robot Dog. I'm Jonathan Stark.
I'm Kelly Shaver.
And we're here to talk about how technology is changing the way we interact with the world. This week, we talk about an audience of one. Please stay tuned. Terrifying Robot Dog is next.
So basically, we're talking about our listening audience.
Yes, you.
You. We made this especially for you.
Insert name here. So I started watching Stranger Things last night.
I started watching it a while ago.
And for folks who don't know, Stranger Things is a Netflix original series that is available on Netflix, obviously. And I was immediately struck. I was immediately sucked in because there were so many. It felt really familiar, but new at the same time. Was that, we'll be careful not to spoil it because we haven't even seen the whole.
No, we haven't finished it.
Yeah. But it's set in the 80s. So of course there's all the, you know, period stuff, the hairdos and the cars and the, you know, hilarious giant phones. That was like my favorite part.
Yeah.
So if you're of a certain age, you know, 40 something, then a lot of the, of course, the sort of scenery and all that stuff, the sets, it's all going to feel really familiar and like sort of nostalgic. But then there's like a layer where there's sort of these, would you call them like homages to other things?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. They reference a lot of movies and media and stuff that came out of the 80s.
Sure. So they're like, you know, there's some kids playing Dungeons and Dragons at one point, and really convincingly, by the way, mm-hmm. I might add. And there's just all sorts of references to stuff that was popular in the 80s, you know, BMX bikes and et cetera, et cetera. But there's this more subtle layer where for a second I was like, I almost was like thinking I was watching a scene from ET just for a second. And there are other parts where it feels like it's straight out of an X-Files episode. And there's just a million references to these other things like, what are some of the other ones? Like Goonies you picked up on.
Yeah, there was some.
The sort of Halloween slasher flicks. And these aren't explicit references necessarily. It's just like, this feels like a scene from a movie. Like, I will bet you that if someone who really knew, was really familiar with a lot of this stuff, could go back and map individual scenes to like previous movies and that sort of thing.
Oh yeah, probably so. And there'd probably be dozens of them.
Yeah. Oh yeah, Star Wars comes up a lot. They even have actors and actresses that were famous in the 80s playing like older people now. So I was like, oh man, you know, the sort of nostalgia factor kicked in with me. And I was like, wow, this is so cool. I was like really sucked in because, you know, I like all of those things.
It's funny because I had the opposite reaction to the nostalgia factor. To me, it just felt like, okay, this is nothing new.
Interesting. You know? Yeah. Yeah, well, that's a good point because it isn't new. It felt new because the story isn't, you know, it's not a remake.
Right. Yeah, I guess the story didn't capture me. Mm-hmm. So everything else just felt kind of, okay, boring, been there, done that.
It's like, yeah, I remember this.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, so it does kind of hinge on the story because if the story's not there, it's sort of like, why am I watching this? Yeah, okay, this was my life mm-hmm. in high school. Or junior right. high. And so I, whatever. So I was in danger of binge watching it, but I was like, all right, I got to go to bed. So like, as I'm laying there, kind of like replaying it in my head, I was, there's all these references. And I started to think, huh, now this is on Netflix and Netflix is well known for creating shows based on, or being able to predict that a show's going to be a hit and therefore funding it.
Yeah.
Which is how House of Cards happened, which was a gigantic hit. Mm-hmm. And they came in, and Kevin Spacey does this great talk we should link to in the show notes, where he describes the difference working with Netflix versus a typical network, like, say, you know, NBC or whatever. Because, they want to do all of those, the old school style is they want to do a pilot, and they want to put the pilot in front of a test audience. And then once that's done, they will either greenlight the series or not. And then they buy 13 episodes and then you go out and do it. And the problem with this, he said, there's a bunch of problems with it, but the one that I specifically remember is that you have to, the pilot has to be a spoiler because you have to tell a complete story. You can't leave anybody hanging because then it won't,
right.
It has to be done and you can't do a long arc. So he was like, with Netflix, you go in and the person who's pitching the show is like, look, we're going to have these elements. We've got these actors lined up to do it. It's going to be like this and this and this. It's going to have these qualities.
Right. And Netflix has the data to say, okay, yeah, that'll be good.
Yeah. Go make 13 shows. Total creative control. And we'll just publish them all at once. Mm-hmm. And he goes on and on about what a big deal this is for both the studios and for the creatives. So, and he's a huge fan. He thinks it's amazing and it's the best thing ever.
Most of the original series coming out of Netflix are really good.
Oh yeah. There's Daredevil. Oh my God.
Oh God. Daredevil's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So good. So I'm sort of like following this through as I'm trying to fall asleep. I'm following this through, this path through of like, oh, okay. So Netflix can somebody can come in and then pitch a show and Netflix can kind of like run it through an algorithm and be like, yeah, that'll be hit or it won't. But what if it was flipped around the other way and Netflix was going around looking for production houses and they were like, look, we need a show that has, you know, that's set in the 1980s, has equal parts E.T., X-Files, and I don't know, Goonies, and it needs to have a couple of actors from the 80s. It needs to have, boom, boom, you know, dimensions. You got to mention Star Wars, got to mention D&D, go, you know?
Yeah.
And so, and then people are like, oh, okay. And they all go out and write a script and come back. And then, so Netflix is kind of driving the creative process by, in this scenario, they're driving the creative process by creating, you're just telling people what's going to be a hit. Like, oh, you could never make a hit before, but now you can. Because if you just do these things, then you have at least a better chance.
Yeah. Yeah. Your idea is great. But then if you include all of these eight things we tell you to include, then it's going to be a hit.
Yeah. It's going to show up in search results. People are going to try it out. So then it's like, okay, what if you take it a step beyond that? And they come up with a way, and this is where it gets sci-fi, but they come up with a way to, instead of having people go out and do it, so like instead of having a production house go and cast it and the sets and all of that, what if there was a way to either give them a huge head start by, you know, pooping out a script or an animation or storyboards, or they can make a cartoon of it? Just automatically.
Like written by artificial intelligence.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, AI is already writing things like sports articles and other stuff. And the reason why is because the form of those things is so predictable. So if we get to a point where there's enough data, because the data that they're using right now is probably not super complete, but it's just going to get better over time. If the data makes user preferences predictable enough, and then you just plug into like, what's that site? TV tropes.
Yeah.
And just like, okay, these tropes are super popular.
Go at it.
Make the story, AI. And no, okay, so here's, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I can see some definite downsides to this.
You think?
Yeah, I like huge downsides to this.
For example.
But it sounds, for example, I think over time, the quality of the shows being produced would just degrade. Because I think once you start pulling in, it would become very formulaic, as if TV isn't formulaic enough already. But you would lose more subtle creativity and subtle undertones that shows tend to have and things like that. And
so before you go on, so I've got two responses to that. First is that an AI beat a Go player, and no one knows how.
True.
So if you had enough data, theoretically, you could solve for that. But let's just say that that's ridiculous. The real thing that would need to happen for the next step is really just one thing, which is that if Netflix could dramatically collapse the cost of creating one of the shows, even if there's still human intervention, if the humans were just involved in the very most important piece. And then all of the implementation details were figured out by either animation, like robots or whatever. Like, you know, maybe it's not a TV show, but that would be the ultimate goal, is that you come out with, you know, the thing creates, maybe the humans seed it with some basic story or a basic story arc or a few things or whatever. And then it goes to town and creates this, like, you know, end to end piece of like 26 episodes, like two seasons of a show. And then they go through and they edit it. And at the end of the day, and just imagine, you know, if they could somehow automate the filming process, then it's game over, because you could then start, instead of aggregating, you know, 18 to 25 year olds as like this group of people generally likes this stuff, you could specifically target me.
Yeah, Netflix has all that viewing history.
Right. So instead of saying, oh, this demographic likes these things, they could say Jonathan Stark likes these things. So, you know, get us something that's, you know, like Terminator meets Caddyshack meets Star Wars, right?
Right. I'm a little scared at what Netflix would come up with for me. Because it's like B-movies meets documentary meets... Yeah.
Yeah, but actually, yeah, if they actually looked at my data, it would be like Paw Patrol meets Phineas and Ferb meets Blade Runner.
Right.
Which gets pretty weird. But now I kind of want to see that. Like, what is that? Like, how cool would that be? I mean, maybe it would be junk, but it would certainly be fresh. Like a mashup of my interests. It turned into a movie or like a TV series. That'd be so weird. So, okay. So what's wild about this is that if they can collapse the cost of creating hyper-specific content for maybe like down to the individual, it doesn't mess up their business model because they don't need eyeballs. They need monthly subscriptions. They're not trying to sell ads. So so it changes everything. This would never work for network because their business model is we have to get a gigantic audience watching this. And the only reason Netflix has to get like the return they need to get out of a show, I mean, this is basic economics of it. I don't know this, but the basic economics must be that there's some ROI calculation for a show. Like, I'm sure they can have flops, but Netflix is very into the long tail because it just keeps people paying that $9 a month or whatever
it
is.
Right. They just need to keep people subscribed.
Yeah. So if the, you know, Phineas and Ferb Blade Runner, you know, if there's like maybe two other people on the planet that want to watch it, it doesn't matter really if it cost them, you know, $1,000 to create it. But so, okay. So we were talking about this a little bit pre-show, and we both went to the same place, which is it turns super creepy because you pair this with VR goggles, and why would you leave?
Right.
All of a sudden, Netflix is dreaming for you.
Yeah, like you're living in the world of Dora the Explorer Goes to Mars.
Right. Yeah, you just have like how would you know when you were dreaming and when you weren't? It's so weird. But so here's the thing that really got me was that even with Netflix, you know, maybe the networks are well known for sort of scoffing at HBO and Netflix because, or like House of Cards, because only like a million people watched it or something. Like, we get that on a Tuesday, for, you know, like Days of Our Lives. That's like, we get 10 million, you know, you guys are bragging about 1 million. So, but still, 1 million is enough to have...
That's a lot of people.
Yeah, it's enough to have that water cooler effect where people are talking about it and, you know, you're like, wait, you know, did you see this yet? And did you see that yet? And like, how far into it? You know, tell me when you're finished so we can talk about it. And
I mean, we've done that in Slack, you know, at work, just because we have enough in common that some of us are watching the same shows on Netflix. And maybe there's only a million people in the world, but... If you like something, chances are your friends are going to like it too, because that's part of the reason why they're your friends. You have things in common.
Right. So that goes away. Like if it's like so hyper specific that it's dreamlike.
Like no one's going to watch the Jonathan Stark show except Jonathan Stark.
Right. Like no one would even get the references. I mean, it would have to be so. I mean, have you ever seen the show Uncle Grandpa?
No.
You've got to watch it. At least just watch a couple episodes. You might not like it, but you have to give him props for being totally insane.
Okay.
And it's a kid's cartoon, but it is totally insane. Like, there's no boundaries at all. Like, no physics, no reality. It's just crazy. It's pure character. It's like what Ray Kurzweil's... It's what I imagine life would be like if Ray Kurzweil's right and we all upload our consciousnesses into the Borg. It's crazy. I love it. And so, and it mixes... there's like aspects of, you know, raster images mixed with standard animation, and it's just crazy. And I could imagine a scenario where the Jonathan Stark show is more dreamlike than show-like, where it's almost just showing me almost like a Clockwork Orange style orgy of nostalgia.
Like weird stuff that only makes sense to you.
Right. It might not even make sense, but it would give me an emotional reaction.
Okay, that's interesting. I don't even know if it would be entertaining at that point so much as it would be just something that you would react to.
Well, I feel like you could dial in a mood. Like, you just say, Netflix, I want to have a good cry, or Netflix, I want to, you know, laugh my head off. And it just mm-hmm. does this thing in front of my eyes. That it's not like clips of it would be in my imagination. It's like, it's somewhere between snippets and new content. It's not like, I don't want to, you know, I can go down a Caddyshack rabbit hole on YouTube now.
Right. You don't want to watch a clip show.
Yeah. I don't want that. It would be like this weird overlapping multimedia experience of whatever mood I dialed in. And like, it's super weird. And like, what would happen if somebody, I'm already going to like, oh, what would happen if somebody like put on your goggles and checked your stuff out? Like, how weird would that be? Like, how weirdly personal would that be? Mm-hmm. Like, talk about, I remember back in the day when you'd accidentally grab somebody else's iPod, and like listening to somebody, like knowing what somebody has in their iPod was like very telling. So yeah. Imagine if your like dream headset, your Netflix dream VR goggles were like showing, you know, somebody else all your wacky weirdness in a non-linear way. Ugh, it's just freaky.
That's weird.
Yeah.
It feels like it would lead to one of those people, like, I suffer from sensory overload really easily. Mm. And so the idea of this kind of nonsensical chaos that evokes an emotional response coming at me. I'm already stressed out about it.
Oh yeah, I feel exhausted just thinking about it, and vaguely scared. Like, it sounds super addictive because it would be triggering parts of your brain that you don't quite understand necessarily. Like, you don't know why it created that result, but it did.
Yeah, it sounds like a drug.
Yeah, it does. It really does.
Throwing bits of audio and visual chaos at your brain to elicit some kind of euphoric response. I mean, it does. It sounds like a drug.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It'd be fun to try. It'd be fun to try and figure out how to do it.
Yeah, I experimented with the Netflix Dream Visor in college. cool. Anyway, so that was just that. This is the kind of thing that goes through my mind as I'm drifting off to sleep. So yeah. Thought we'd share that.
And I thought my dreams were weird.
Your dreams are weird.
My dreams are weird.
Don't sell yourself short.
It's a funny thing to think about. They have or are going to have or are capable of having all of this data to make personalized experiences. It's just fun to think about what those could end up looking like and what the ramifications are, because it feels like it would be isolating because I couldn't talk to people about it. But at the same time, there's just the potential for weirdness there that amuses me.
Yeah, it's the thing that I find most interesting about it is that it's enabled... Well, it's enabled by a bunch of things, actually, but one of them is Netflix's business model, which is fascinating that I think that a business model could potentially enable what would really, I think it'd be fair to say, a new kind of media, because it's not really a TV show. It wouldn't really be a movie, I don't think.
No, it's just this weird viewing experience that's tailored specifically to the thing you want to see at the time.
Yeah, so weird. So... Anyway, so but then you also throw like artificial intelligence and virtual reality into the mix, and all of a sudden you've got something like, it's just different. It's like it couldn't have existed at any other time. So I mean, it's certainly okay. All of this is probably just like
us being crazy.
Yeah, ravings of a lunatic. But it certainly is the case that the combination of the technology and the new style content business model, the subscription approach instead of a ad-based approach changes the dynamics in a way that I think it's fair to, I think it's fair to say that something like Daredevil or House of Cards is not really a TV show. It's more like, it's more like a 20-hour movie.
It is more like, yeah, it is more like a 20-hour movie.
Yeah, and you don't, but that's, but a 20-hour movie is not really a movie, is it? That's like a new thing. It's like a new kind of thing.
I guess it's like a mini series.
True, yeah, but it's kind of like that.
Yeah, but you don't see those on TV so much anymore.
Yeah, too freaking expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the whole thing. It's like it comes down to the financial feasibility.
Yeah, you're right. Again, it comes down to the business model. Mm. And then there too, you know, they're doing some, they've got to be doing all kinds of data mining on this stuff already, or they wouldn't be producing shows like this. So other than, you know, the artificial intelligence and the virtual reality and the, I mean, sure, that part feels like weird, like a weird stretch to create this visual chaos headset. But but I mean, they're definitely using this information to create tailored content already. And again, this is just one step further. And what if they tailor it just to you because they've figured out a way to drive down the expense?
Right, because they and they benefit. See, unlike the networks, they benefit from the long tail. Like having that huge library of content, they don't care. There's no incremental cost. So once it's there, it doesn't matter. So
at some point somewhere, there'll be another weirdo that's just as weird as you and finds your odd dream experience to be just as exciting and entertaining. And then suddenly you have the new Netflix dating service for freaks.
I'm suddenly thinking like Netflix. I haven't heard any news about Netflix and VR, but I'm suddenly wondering if that's on their radar.
Be interesting.
Yeah.
Netflix original now in virtual reality.
Right. Like I thinking about when I think about the sort of four horsemen of the apocalypse, it's like Facebook, Google, Amazon, and then maybe Apple or Microsoft. But now I'm thinking Netflix is maybe on that list.
It could be.
Because I don't know, you know, in HBO's, I mean, it's, there's a content, like none of those, the other ones that I mentioned, none of them are content. Like who's going to be the, who's going to be the content winner?
Yeah. Amazon is the closest right now with their Prime Video services.
Yeah, I guess so.
And I guess Amazon owns Twitch as well.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I don't really think of them that way, but it is true.
IMDb. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not where Amazon's focus is though.
Right. I mean, they feel like hyper-focused on e-commerce, even though, I mean, they've got AWS and they do have Prime Movies. That's true. Then they have some of their own episodes, their own shows, series. I've watched a couple. They've been good, you know, top tier acting talent, all that. So, interesting. Well, if nothing else, it'll be entertaining. We'll have something to freak ourselves out to as we're riding around yes. in our self-driving Ford cars.
Yes.
Maybe we could talk about that next week.
Yeah, maybe.
Very cool. Yeah, let's leave it there.
Okay.
A little thought-provoking episode for y'all.
Yes, get the imagination juices flowing.
Right, while you still can. That's our show for this week. I'm Jonathan Stark.
And I'm Kelly Shaver.
And we hope you join us again next week for Terrifying Robot Dog. Bye.
Bye.
Would you like to support Terrifying Robot Dog? Just think of two friends who would dig the show and send them to terrifyingrobotdog.com for links to iTunes, Facebook, and RSS feeds. If you don't have two friends, you can still help us out by leaving a nice review in iTunes. Thanks.